All right, we are back here on Sports Phone KMBR. Kerry Crowley rolling with you until 9 o'clock this evening. Our San Francisco Giants second half predictions show this evening. And anytime we talk Giants baseball here on The Leader, I always love to do it with my right-hand man, co-host of the K-Raj podcast, really our leader of the K-Raj podcast, and the writer of the There Are Giants Substack, Roger Munter. Roger, how are you this evening?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about the leader thing, Kerry. I'm going to split co-leader with you on that. But doing well. The slowest sports day of the year, and I'm ready to get the second half going.
Absolutely. Certainly the most rational voice on the K-Raj podcast, but that's neither here nor there. We will keep things rolling. And anytime there's a Major League Baseball draft, I always want to pick your brain on it because I know that you follow the draft, you follow the player acquisition process very closely, and then you follow these guys through their minor league careers on the There Are Giants Substack. This week on Sunday, the Giants take James Tibbs III out of Florida State. What I know about Tibbs, he's an outfielder. He got better each year, left-handed hitter at Florida State. I'm sure you can give our audience more in-depth breakdown of the guy who could be a top Giants prospect, who might now be a top Giants prospect as soon as he signs that contract.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tibbs is a really good fit for this organization. He basically does all of the things that this club really values. They always talk about dominating the strike zone. James Tibbs is one of the best combinations in college baseball this year of staying in the strike zone, looking for pitches he can attack, and then driving them all over the field. There's, you know, I always shy away from comps to major league players because it's a long way from college to the majors. But there's a lot about his swing and his game that is comparable to Lamont Wade Jr. Tibbs has shown more power in college than Wade does, but there's a very similar approach there of being very disciplined within the area he wants to attack and having an idea for what he wants to do and staying away from pitches outside the zone. This organization loves that kind of hitter, so he was kind of a perfect match for them.
Yeah, very interesting that the Giants went a lot of outfield selections early in the draft. Of course, they did not have a second and third round pick because they signed Blake Snell and Matt Chapman, qualifying offer guys. They brought them in this year to compete. The Giants at 47-50, not really doing that right now, but a lot can change very quickly. The other player who the Giants drafted that I wanted to ask you about, Roger, is Dakota Jordan, outfielder out of Mississippi State, because he was someone who, when the second day of the draft started, it felt like he was on everyone's list of a top player available. This is someone who has incredible raw power, obviously struck out a lot at Mississippi State. What do you know about Dakota Jordan and why he became a San Francisco Giant in the draft?
Yeah, first let me just say, I think their approach to this whole draft was pretty interesting, pretty smart, and it dovetailed with their needs because this was a draft which was really college hitter heavy. That's where the depth of talent in this class was, and that's what they came away with. They came away with a lot of college power bats, and I think that really invigorates a system that was in need of some power bats. So it worked well that this draft set up for them. Dakota Jordan, yeah, he was. A lot of people have him as a top 40 talent. He was a draft-eligible sophomore, which gave him a little more financial leverage than a lot of players coming out of college. That makes a big difference in the MLB draft in terms of where you get taken. I assume he had a slightly elevated bonus number that he wanted out there that maybe caused the drop to the fourth round, but the Giants were certainly thrilled to get a guy who could legitimately have gone in the back of the first round with his tools in the fourth round. It was really a coup that he fell to him there. He's a guy who is really a football star. He was a football player in high school. He even played football at Mississippi State prior to this last year, so he's never really focused on baseball full-time until this year. He has ginormous power. There's a clip out on the internet of him hitting a ball about 450 feet, just yep, demolishing it. He's very fast. I mean, he looks like a free safety or a strong safety. He's got that kind of really athletic, strong, powerful, fast build. He's still raw, but you'd expect him to be, given that he's never really focused on baseball. He's still young at 21, so you can hope for a lot of skills refinement sort of quickly from him. Anytime you get a two-sport athlete like that, that's the hope, that once you focus him on baseball, it's going to start clicking in with them, and then he has the tools to really move once that happens.
Yeah, love the draft picks with a high ceiling, especially when you can get them in the fourth round or later, and the Giants did that with Dakota Jordan. So, Roger, one last one on the draft before we flip things over to this Major League ball club, and that is the Giants draft this year, where they're taking outfielders early, they're taking power hitters in the first 10 rounds, is it reflective of their realization that maybe that's the approach that this organization needs if it wants to have homegrown hitters, well, not just homegrown, but true power hitters in its lineup? Because Oracle Park has historically been a tough place to draw hitters to in free agency, or is this just something where, hey, the farm system needed a bunch of bats and the Giants were able to go out and get those bats in this year's draft?
You know, I feel like every year, you know, there's immediate access to Michael Holmes, the scouting director, after each day. And I feel like every year we ask him, well, were you intending to get this kind of draft? And every year his answer is the same. It's like, we let the board come to us. We let the draft come to us. And I really think that is what they do. You know, one year they may be pitching heavy. One year they're high school heavy. This year they're corner bat heavy, because that's where the strength of the draft was. And they did, you know, do their due diligence, get out there and find talent, line up the board, and then just run with it. I think it really is circumstance of how the board is lining up for that particular class.
It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. You get style. You get features. You get quality and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare. In-store at mybobs.com.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Good to see you, Bruce Feldman. The Big 12 landscape. I just know how Dion is, where he's coming from. His wins are measured differently. The question is, as you said, it's got to go from 4 to 8.
I think they can do that. It would be hard not to get better considering how bad they were on the offensive line last year. Now, their schedule actually feels harder this year than it was last year.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Roger Munter, who writes the great There Are Giants Substack and co-hosts the K-Raj podcast with me, talking with us here on Sports Phone KMBR this evening. So, Roger, let's fast forward a few weeks. A little under 2 weeks from now, we'll have Major League Baseball's trade deadline. The Giants return to play on Friday against the Colorado Rockies. They're 47-50. Farhan Zaidi, president of baseball operations, was on these airwaves recently hinting that, hey, they might be open to selling. I don't see it because of all of the resources they committed this offseason to winning this year and all the players they're coming back with after this All-Star break. What do you envision for the Giants when the trade deadline rolls around?
I mean, it really is curious, isn't it? They have already made a couple of moves to jettison veteran players and let some young guys get more opportunity, which isn't typically the type of behavior you associate with buying. They are kind of all in, which suggests that they shouldn't be selling. I assume they're going to take some kind of a middle path and hope that this wave of impactful pitching really does come back to the roster in the second half. I mean, we saw what Blake Snell can be finally in that last game. We know what Robbie Ray can be. You could still look at this roster and say two Cy Youngs and Logan Webb, a Cy Young runner-up, can be a very, very good thing to have rolling into October and see it working out. But at some point, I kind of agree with Farhan. At some point, the players have to assert a winning culture somehow on the field. I don't know how that alchemy takes place, but at some point, it has to go from there's a talented roster to these guys are winning regularly, and that's what we have to see. I don't know if we're going to see any big moves. I think there may be some small things around the edges, but we may see more moves that help get young players into the lineup, and then just hope that that combination of young and old with the pitching is going to be enough to sneak them into this playoff race, which it absolutely could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this playoff race is wide open right now. It's a reason that at 47-50, we're still talking about the Giants as a potential playoff contender, because they're only 3 games out coming out of the All-Star break from that last wild card spot. So, Roger, tonight is a prediction show here on Sports Phone, asking every guest for their predictions for the second half of the season. I want to start with this for you. Who will be the Giants' primary shortstop during the month of September? Is it Brett Wisely? Does Marco Luciano, who was on a recent hot stretch, and I know you wrote about him, does he come back up and assert himself? Or do the Giants potentially look elsewhere at the trade deadline and find a shortstop of the future? How do you see this unfolding?
I think it's going to be Brett Wisely. I think they're going to play Brett Wisely and let Tyler Fitzgerald come in against some left-handers. I think if Luciano gets onto this club, which I'm sure they still hope that he does, I don't think it's going to be at shortstop. I think it's going to be somewhere else on the field.
Would somewhere else be second base where he's been playing a lot? Do you think that's the kind of the primary position the Giants see after shortstop for him?
He has been playing there. It's really interesting because that would suggest Tyro Estrada isn't there, which would seem kind of a dramatic move to me. I mean, Tyro has really struggled offensively the last few months, but he's still a dynamic defensive player. I wonder if somewhere else might be something more like a Wilmer Flores role, to be honest. And I certainly wish Wilmer no harm. He's been a great Giant the last few years. But if they are making room for people, the kind of role that Wilmer has played, playing first base against left-handers, playing some third base against left-handers, mixing around, playing DH, I could see that being a Luciano role maybe more than everyday second base right now.
It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. You get style. You get features. You get quality and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare. In-store or at mybobs.com.
We're all juggling life, a career, and trying to build a little bit of wealth. The Brown Ambition Podcast with host Mandy and Tiffany the Budget Nista can help.
Let's talk about the financials behind locks. It can be quite pricey, but as your hair locks, it needs way less product. When I had my fro, it was way more costly as it relates to products because my fro was thirsty.
Mm-hmm. Very expensive. Yeah.
Yes. I need the whole bottle. So.
What, a dime-sized portion of what?
Girl, the laughter.
Brown Ambition.
Wherever you listen.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And when you think about the grand scheme of things for the San Francisco Giants, could be an easier way to get him onto the roster and making contributions. So, Roger, moving forward into the second half, Elliot Ramos has 14 home runs right now, Matt Chapman with 13 home runs, Jorge Soler with 10. If I ask you today, who finishes the season as the Giants' home run leader and how many do they end up with, what's your call?
Well, this is recency bias. We've watched Elliot be really hot for 2 months. But Ramos actually has, I think, 22 homers on the year if you put his minor and major league numbers together, which is a pretty good gap in terms of pace. Pace is something that runs into the dog days pretty hard sometimes. But I'm going to go with Ramos. I'm going to say he ends up as the home run leader on this call.
Yeah, I like that call. 14 already this season. Chapman at 13. Like I said, Soler at 10. It would be great for Ramos. And look, he's a really interesting player development story, Roger. I think we've all heard the tale this year of, Ramos's 2017 first-round draft pick struggled in his brief major league stints the last few years. What have you noticed that's different about this year's version of Elliot Ramos, aside from the obvious numbers and the stats? But what's different from his approach at the plate and maybe what you see in him as a hitter?
Well, one thing that is different, and this isn't quite answering your question, but the Ramos we've always watched in the minor leagues was a guy who just bounced on the field with a lot of joy and a lot of energy, and that hasn't been the case for him in the majors in the last couple of years, and you are seeing that sort of confident, fun player again in the majors, which I love. It shows that he's comfortable here finally. But I really think the big thing is – he talked a couple of years ago when he was really struggling about being tight in his swing. He's an extremely, muscular upper body. And I just think there was something about growing into that body that tightened up his swing, caused him to put a lot of balls on the ground. And he had to kind of learn to get more flexibility and loosen up that swing. Once he did that, if you go back and look at his numbers in 2022, even when he was really, really bad, in terms of production, he was still hitting the ball harder than anybody in the organization. Mm-hmm. Once he got to the point where he started putting some loft in the swing and started getting under the ball instead of putting everything on the ground, that underlying strength, showed through. That's why you're seeing some swings that are pretty remarkable, because he always had that power. He just wasn't, his swing mechanics were not allowing him to get those balls in the air, so he wasn't utilizing it the way he is now. I think that's the biggest difference, is somehow he's loosened up his swing so that he can get that hard contact into the air.
Yeah, and it certainly has been fun to watch. It's been great to see for Giants fans. Elliot Ramos, the homegrown outfielder representing the team in the All-Star game on Tuesday evening in Arlington. So, Roger, last one from me, and I know that this one could be really difficult because we're projecting out here. This is the 2024 predictions show, second half predictions, but I want to skip ahead and include 2025 in this. Over the next year and a half, who do you think offers the Giants more in terms of their starting pitching? Kyle Harrison or Hayden Birdsong?
That's a real tough one. I've always been a huge Kyle Harrison fan. I think he has the mindset to succeed. He's very disciplined, very determined. But I think one thing that has been holding him back a little bit is that he really hasn't found secondaries that he's confident in and that work for him regularly that miss bats. Hayden Birdsong has secondaries that miss bats right now, and there's more than one. And that's something he's really worked at hard. I remember talking to him opening night this year, and he really wanted to impress me. He's like, did you see how often I used my changeup? I'm like, yeah, I did see that. And, you know, that changeup and that slider, he has really worked on this year. Last year, he was very much fastball curve, and he's really worked to diversify his repertoire. I just think he has more weapons right now, and Kyle's still searching for what the real reliable weapons are after the fastball. I still have faith that he's going to find those, but if you're talking about this year and next year, I like Birdsong's right now repertoire more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to argue with that and hard to argue with the man who covers the Giants farm system as in-depth as anyone. Roger Munter does a great job with There Are Giants Substack. I love co-hosting the K-Rodge podcast with him and getting him here on KMBR on Sports Phone with us. Always a treat. Roger, thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
Kerry, it is always a treat for me. I can't wait for the next K-Rodge.
All right, more coming up next. You're listening to Sports Phone. Giants second half prediction show rolls on. KMBR 104.5 680 The Sports Leader.
Are you tired of losing your fantasy football league year after year? Lindsay Rhodes, Emmy-winning sportscaster and football analyst, is your new secret weapon on the Believe Fantasy Football Show.
Watch the quarterbacks and his ADP. I think he has massive high-end upside.
Get expert analysis on player rankings.
Wide receiver 22 in fantasy, Cecil Shorts.
That kid can run, so I'm thinking he can have a breakout season this year.
And you can, too, by searching the Believe Fantasy Football Show. That's B-L-E-A-V, wherever you listen.